Yes, I am. Despite working, for an art school, I am actually an archaeologist. That's quite a long and complicated story, but what we focus on, or what I focus on at the art school is, as you said, international heritage visualisation. And what I'm going to talk to you about this morning is a project that we engaged in with Janet and other colleagues in the Ultra High Definition Special Interest Group, where we were looking at the potential not just for 4K ultra high definition video itself, but the potential for actually streaming this from site to site and how useful that might be for us. Archaeologist. That's quite a long and complicated story, but what we focus on, or what I focus on at the art school is, as you said, international heritage visualisation. And what I'm going to talk to you about this morning is a project that we engaged in with Janet and other colleagues in the Ultra High Definition Special Interest Group, where we were looking at the potential not just for 4K ultra high definition video itself, but the potential for actually streaming this from site to site and how useful that might be for us. I'd like right at the very beginning to make two points. One is, people have already made excuses. I'm not that technical. I was not involved in the bits and bobs. I will show you a diagram on the actual technical setup that we used. If there is questions on that, I might have to get back to you, or perhaps there might be somebody in the room who can answer it. The other point I wanted to make is that what we did in presenting a showcase early on in January this year, where we were streaming 4K video from a site down in Cardiff up to a site in Glasgow, and we were also interacting live with applications generating 4K output. None of that would have been possible, actually, without very close working with Janet, very close working with the other members of the Ultra High Definition Special Interest Group. And I'd like to particularly thank our colleague Mark Daly down at the University of Cardiff, who actually provided the machines from which we streamed the content, and also colleagues in Bristol who were enormously helpful with their technical advice. And we also got quite a lot of technical advice from the hardware manufacturers we were using. There was early on in the process, there was an idea that we would plug these hardware devices in and everything would work magically. But this is fairly new technology, and there was some interesting issues arose fairly early on, and the hardware manufacturers, Intepex, actually were enormously helpful in resolving those for us as well. So I am going to conclude this talk with showing you some examples of the 4K content, but first let me give you some context for them. Part of my work at the Digital Design Studio in the Glasgow School of Art is looking at international heritage visualization, and to generate the content for that visualization, or for those visualizations rather, we engage in a lot of high resolution 3D laser scanning. Hopefully everybody will be familiar with this in principle. The important things to note is that in recent years, there's been huge advances made in the speed and accuracy of the devices we're able to use, and it's possible to scan, using a time flight laser, to scan buildings and recording points to extreme sub-millimeter levels of accuracy, up to a million times a second. So you do generate very, very large data sets doing this. These data sets have a number of uses: management uses, uses for research and analysis, uses for presentation to the public and so on. However, it's an important point to bear in mind the size and scale of the data sets that are being generated. For an example of this, the first example of this, This is not a mesh, this is not a model, this is simply a point cloud of a building in the centre of Glasgow. It's currently the Gallery of Modern Art, started life as a country house, built in 1778. And you get an impression from this image here, I hope, of the density of data that we're actually dealing with. So this has not been modelled or meshed in any way, this is simply us looking at the point cloud itself. all the data that I'm going to go on and show you was created by a partnership called the Center for Digital Documentation and Visualization. And this partnership involves very close working between Historic Scotland and also the Digital Design Studio at the Glasgow School of Art. And they've engaged, or we rather, have engaged in quite a large-scale project over a number of years called the Scottish 10. And the idea of the Scottish 10 is to engage in high-resolution replication management, or high-resolution documentation for management and analysis purposes of the five UNESCO World Heritage Sites inside the UK. And these are they. There's only the five at the moment. There's the New Lanark, there's the Heart of Neolithic Orkney, there's the Island of St Kilda, and I've got some video content from St Kilda, which we're going to see later on in this presentation. There's Edinburgh Old New Towns, both parts are inscribed in the World Heritage List. That's quite a big project, as you can imagine. The scanning of that is actually still taking place, not quite completed. And also the Antonine Wall, which is the most northerly of the Roman frontier barriers, and is part of a larger World Heritage Site called Frontiers of the Roman Empire, which includes walls and monuments, including Hadrian's Wall and monuments in Germany and so on. Project's called the Scottish 10. Only five World Heritage Sites. So there's another five sites which the Scottish 10 project are engaged in recording as an exercise, partly in cultural diplomacy. It's the project supported by the Scottish Government, but also looking at monuments which are actively at risk. For example, Mount Rushmore in the United States, not something we normally think of being at risk, but of course it's a newly exposed rock face suffering from erosion. And high-resolution scans of that were generated and are being used by the National Parks Authority of America for monitoring that erosion. The Ranikavav Stepwell, which is on the tentative list of World Heritage Sites, and we've got some video of that, which we're going to show later on, and also the Eastern Qing tombs in China, which are not under direct threat, although being wooden buildings, they have suffered from fire damage in the past. Bit of a stretch to say that Sydney Opera House is under direct risk, I have to say, although there is some suggestion that with global warming, sea level rise may actually cause some potential risk for them there. It is, in actual fact, the youngest structure on the UNESCO World Heritage list. The tenth one has yet to be decided. Negotiations are underway for which is the last site in this project, which is going to be recorded in detail. Again, going back to the issues of scale of data, the scan of the Sydney Opera House not only required some novel approaches in terms of site access. Unfortunately, with the Sydney Opera House, if you're standing at the bottom, you cannot see the top of the structure. If you're at the top of the structure, you can't see the bottom. And time-of-flight lasers, in actual fact, require line of sight. So there was a lot of work done generating custom rigs, and a lot of rope access work was required to actually generate this scan. The raw scan data, as it stands, is 260 gigabytes. So this is without any additional modelling and processing going on top of this. The final data sets will be extremely large. And I think this highlights one of the problems that the work with Janet and the UHD showcase and the work with the special interest group are helping to resolve, is that there is a problem about how you actually deliver these very, very large data sets. It's all very well for us to generate them and have them sitting around our machines, and one or two people can come in and do analytical work on them, but how are we actually delivering them to audiences around the world? I also mentioned medical visualization in the at the very first slide of this presentation. This is because the Digital Design Studio at Glasgow School of Art has been working for a number of years on a project around a definitive three-dimensional model of the human body for purposes of teaching and training. And we have the 3D head and neck model, which is a highly detailed, medically validated model, extremely useful for dental and other medical training, can be delivered via desktop, makes much more sense to deliver it for teaching and training purposes via a large screen. And one of the things we demonstrated in January at the UHD showcase is where we had an instance of the head and neck software running on machines in Cardiff, but being operated remotely from Glasgow with the 4K, with the application itself actually generating 4K content, and that 4K content being displayed up in Glasgow. And I think that indicates the way forward for the deployment of the head and neck software. Glasgow School of Art has arrangements with other higher education institutes in the Highlands and Islands and Inverness and so on, and the fact that we can actually run training sessions remotely and stream the content up is a significant advantage actually for that for this application. Here's the technical bits, which I'm much less qualified to talk about. This for those of you who are interested, the video content specifications. This is from the showcase in January. Obviously, the resolution is 4K. The color spaces there are bit depth. Frame rate was running at 24 frames per second. Each of those frames is 30 megabytes, or originally was, and we used a JPEG 2000 codec. I believe the codec we're using for the display today is MP4. So here is the hardware diagram from the January showcase, which includes lots of words and acronyms that I genuinely don't understand. But in principle, what's happening there is the PC in Cardiff is generating the content. It's being generated through four channels. Those channels are being compressed on the fly, transferred across the Janet network to the Janet from Cardiff up to Glasgow, where in essence, again on the fly, in real time, it's decoded, split into four different channels. Not quite sure why at that stage, because it then goes back into one HDMI cable and is connected to again a Sony 4K connector projector, exactly the projector that we're going to have a look at today. So hopefully that gives you an idea of what we were doing and why we were doing it. I think it'd be nice now to have a look at some of the video content, which I'll walk you through. Requires powering up the projector.
You keep talking, I'll press buttons.
Oh right, okay, that's great. Okay, so I think the first video. This is all being compressed into one video. So we're gonna run it and then maybe pause if we can. The first video we're going to show you speaks directly to that issue I was talking about with Sydney Opera House, where the problem is how we deliver. Oh, I can't see my notes now. how we deliver 260 gigabytes of data, in a way that's actually meaningful. And this model, which is obviously you can see being constructed from the bottom up here, is being used not just for the management of the building, but actually it's such a good model of the internal spaces. It's been used for planners. It's inside the Sydney Opera House company itself for figuring out how to move large pieces of machinery, large pieces of stage set in and out. So it's actually been a very useful planning tool for them. And I think when you see it at this 4K resolution, you begin to get an idea of exactly how rich this data set is. And it's almost impossible to get that impression in any other way unless you're accessing the data directly. If we move on, we're now going to look, I think, at Rani Kavav, which is one of those World Heritage sites. It's a stepwell in Gujarat in India. This is actually quite a low-resolution model we're looking at. This is to give you a sense of the scale of the site. It's a stepwell which is up to 60 metres deep in places, 13th, 14th century. But of most interest to us, and I think the video is just going to run straight onto this, are these amazing decorative panels which surround the stepwell. These are really the reason why it is inscribed in the World Heritage site. An amazing thing happened with this stepwell is that it silted up very, very early on in its life. This is exactly the kind of thing archaeologists love, because it means when you excavate it, you're getting material which is very, very close to its original condition. This is a gigapan image, going and showing you the various gods and goddesses. These sculptural panels are very well known, not just for their beauty, but also for the numerous examples of naughty monkeys, which people love. And just to give you an idea of the scale of that, actually, that's probably... these are about a metre high, so we're actually more than life size now, in actual fact. I think in the next gigapan image, which we have of the stepwell, if you're very quick, you might see a pigeon in there somewhere. I've never been able to find it, but I'm told there's a pigeon lurking in there. I was also told by one of the team who was out there, this is a really interesting perspective, that he was out there in the bright sunlight doing the scanning, helping to produce these gigapan images, and I was showing him this as in preview just before the showcase itself, and he was saying to me he got a better impression of the scale and detail looking at these 4K images than he did when he was actually working in the field for various reasons, including the difficulty of the lighting conditions. Okay, I think we're now going to move on to look at that St Kilda site.
Yep.
What we're actually looking at here is a digital terrain model generated using a LiDAR survey commissioned by Historic Scotland of St Kilda. St Kilda, some of you may be aware, out in the North Atlantic, was occupied from the Bronze Age right up until the 1930s when the last community was actually evacuated. It holds a very, very important place in the kind of folk memory of Scotland, particularly in the Western Isles, and the tragic events leading up to its evacuation have very, very strong resonance amongst local communities up in the Western Isles in general. So what we're looking at is a LiDAR imagery with a high-definition image draped on top of it. The sky and the clouds are actually part of the model. They're not genuine. But the next, this is amazing. Speaking with an archaeological hat on, this is absolutely tremendous. And this was the bit of 4K video that absolutely blew me away and convinced me of its utility. If you have experience or are used to looking at high definition aerial photography, normally what happens is aerial photographies come in very, very small lumps. It'd be probably worth pausing this, actually, just to come in very, very small lumps or small areas, maybe 500 metres across, and you're required to look at they may be very high definition, but you're required to look at them in these little chunks and try and figure out how bits of a landscape fit together, how bits of a monument fit together. This is the first time I've ever seen imagery at this scale, which is amenable to analysis, in actual fact. And I know from, again, speaking to the aerial photography team at Historic Scotland, that this has actually made a very big impression, I have to say, because now you're looking at high-definition images that are amenable to analysis, but allow you to analyse at a landscape scale. And it might... If you're not experienced in doing this, that might sound like a trivial thing, but it actually makes a massive difference to understanding what we're seeing in the landscape there. There's a huge amount in there, actually, from field systems to these creek structures. And you can obviously see the High Street of St Kilda itself. And not all the buildings we're seeing there were in use at the same time. There was a whole range of improvement processes that incidentally probably led to, or was one of the driving reasons behind the abandonment of the islands, again in the 1930s. So the last video, if we're moving on. Slightly different one, this. This is also from the Scottish Ten. This is the one of the Shaolin temples of the Eastern Qing tomb complex, which was where basically all the most famous Chinese emperors are interred. It was used right up to the 19th century. But what we're seeing here is not actually a laser scan. What we're seeing is a model generated from a laser scan. So you use the laser scan as a way of building up, using constructive solid geometry, this model that allows you to very accurately represent all the different architectural elements. And we included this one not just because it's very beautiful, but because it gives you an idea of how it can be used, of this 4K technology can be used to allow people to understand the relationship of architectural elements for teaching and learning purposes. So I'll hope that's our final video. I hope you agree with me that it's not only astonishing in terms of the resolution, but the fact that this is able to be streamed from site to site and to be operated interactively represents a really significant opportunity, and definitely one that the DDS are going to be chasing up in the future. But in addition to that, perhaps unexpectedly, as demonstrated by the St Kilda 4K, is that irrespective of whether you can move it about a network or not, actually being able to view the data at this level of resolution is itself an enormous benefit when it comes to analysis. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
We again have time for a couple of questions, if anyone has anything for Stuart. While people are thinking, I have one. I think you almost answered it in your final remarks there, but is this visualization actually a route to new science and new insight into the archaeology, as well as just beautiful images?
Yes, it is. I mean, I have to say that given the nature of the sites that were involved in the Scottish Ten project, actually they've been the focus of a lot of intense research over the years. They're inscribed in the World Heritage Site list, so they're particularly useful for management rather than direct analysis. But having said that, I think St Kilda kind of gives a lie to that, because I've never seen a high definition imagery on that scale before. And it's a real advantage. And also, I cannot think of any other way of giving people an impression of a site like Rani Kavav in that detail. It simply doesn't work in the desktop, that's for sure. And I know that we're under, you know, there's a big drive going towards mobile devices and smaller screens. Well, sometimes when you get sites that are very big and very, very impressive, that's an important element of understanding them, and actually being able to present them that way enhances the understanding much more so than trying to look at it on a tablet or on a laptop.
Right, thank you. Were there any questions?
There we go. Hi, it's Chris again. On the St Kilda's image, was that filmed on the gantry, moving gantry?
No, that was entirely computer generated. So there was there's a LiDAR scan, which is an aerial. The aerial equivalent of that laser scanner is mounted in an airplane, and it takes it gives you a resolution of about 0.25 of a meter. So every 25 centimeters, you're getting a point in X, Y, Z. And at the same time as that, the flight was done for the LiDAR, high definition digital photography was taken as well. So what you're seeing is a drape over the LiDAR surface, and then a virtual camera moving over that surface. I mean, quite impressive stuff, actually.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to thank once again all of our speakers who have overcome various technical issues and brought us on time to the end of the session, and to thank all of you for your kind attention. I'd encourage you once again to have a think about questions you might raise or advice you'd like to give through our lightning talks. Hope to see you all at the conference dinner this evening. And please join me in thanking all of our speakers once again.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.